Thanks for listening to this podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes it possible. Thank you.
Often, we find ourselves in the story. Like, great books paint a perfect picture of what they want you to walk into. And so that's what I want to do. I want my song to be a setting, and then the listener, they can insert themselves into the song.
Thanks for joining us. Another edition of The Exchange. Here I'm Ed Stetzer. We're going to discuss truths, thoughts, and theology. On today's show, my colleague and co-host Micah Fries will be joined by a musician you've probably sung along with in the car. His name is Brandon Heath. Now, Brandon's best known for number one songs like Give Me Your Eyes and I'm Not Who I Was. He's actually released 5 studio albums. The latest is No Turning Back, nominated and won multiple Dove Awards. Second album was nominated for Grammy Gospel Album of the Year. Before we get to their conversation, Pastor Matt Chandler is here to encourage us to keep our churches focused on the gospel.
And a gospel-centered church consistently and constantly reminds its people of the gospel. A church that is gospel-centered will consistently and constantly remind people of who they were before they heard the gospel. And a gospel-centered church consistently celebrates and rejoices in the present power of the gospel for daily life. So that's my outline. Now let me show it to you. Here you see in the first verse something that's throughout Paul's writings. He said, "Now I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel that I preach to you." Paul seems to be consumed with reminding people of a message they have already heard. So we see it in Romans 1, 13 through 15, where he says, "I want you to know, brothers." So again, Paul isn't prone to slang, all right? He's not like, "Hey, bro." He's literally, "Brothers, my brothers in Christ. I want you to know, brothers, that I have often intended to come to you, but thus far have been prevented, in order that I might reap some harvest among you, as well as among the rest of the Gentiles. For I am under obligation both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the foolish. So I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome." So I want to come to Rome and I want to preach the gospel to those of you who have heard the gospel. So he wants to come and he wants to remind them of what is true about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Something they have already received, he wants to continually lay before them. We see him do this in Galatians. You want to get into Galatians 2:20 through 3. 1 through 6. This is a church that's veering from gospel teaching, and the outline of Galatians is just an aerial bombardment on this bent towards leaving the gospel behind and believing new teaching. You see that in chapter 1. Leaving behind, walking in step, so that there's an application of the gospel in present life, but I just got ahead of myself. And so he wants to remind them. You see this in Ephesians 1 and 2. What is Ephesians 1 and 2 except don't forget the gospel? Here's what happened. Here's what Jesus did. Here's what God has accomplished in Jesus Christ. You see it also in Philippians 1, specifically in 12 through 17, that the Apostle Paul's going to say, whatever happens, it serves the gospel. So again, he's going to continually lay before the churches that have been founded on and planted in the gospel that they need to remember the gospel. Now, what are the application points for us as churches in regards to remembering or reminding the people of the gospel? Here's the question that I would ask about how you're operating as a church. Are you in your philosophy and your practice reminding people of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ? So in your philosophy and practice, so here's what, I don't want you to answer theologically because I know that answer. All right, you're going to say, absolutely, we talk about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I'm saying in philosophy and practice. See, if there's a disjoint between what your doctrinal statement says and what you're actually teaching via the culture of your church, then Peter Drucker said that culture will eat strategy for breakfast. So regardless of what your doctrinal statement said, my question is, in your philosophy and practice, are you teaching, reminding, pointing back to the gospel consistently?
Brandon, thanks so much for being with us today, man. We're excited about just talking about songwriting, your career for the next few minutes together. And one of the things I like about your music is it resonates at the level of story with people, right? So it's not just lyrics, chorus. I mean, it threads through this story. Tell us about how you begin the process of putting these songs together, just thinking through what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, You mean like my latest songs or
just your career. One of the things I love about your career is you look across all your albums is you're telling story through songs. So it's not just, you know, lyrics, chorus. I mean, you're telling these storylines as you put these songs together. So is that how you think? I mean, are you thinking in story?
I do. Yeah. And I think there's something to be said for story. Not that it's the only way to communicate, but it does seem to be a way to get a broader audience to understand one certain topic.
Right.
And I love that Jesus spoke in story a lot, you know. And that's not necessarily the core reason of why I do it, but it's more that I actually love John Prine is a great songwriter, storyteller. I've always really loved that aspect in country music or, you know, in folk pop folk music often uses story in telling, conveying whatever their message is in a song. So I really kind of like doing that. And it sets me apart a little bit from everybody else in the game, you know. But it is really the thing that I recently actually did this personality test where I learned that I am big into aesthetic.
No kidding. Yeah, that's cool.
And that I have a tendency of setting a stage for people.
Yeah.
Because I want them to see the whole picture. And I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily long-winded, but I want people to see every aspect of something when I'm explaining it to them because I really want them to understand it.
Yeah.
And I think story is a way to do that.
Yeah.
Rather than just kind of have one pointed, you know, angle.
Sure.
You set a stage for people to experience something. And I think story does that because often we find ourselves in the story. Like great books.
Exactly.
You know, paint a perfect picture of what they want you to walk into. And so that's what I want to do. I want my song to be a setting.
Yeah.
And then the listener to that they can insert themselves into the song.
Yeah, I think, I mean, historically, human, you know, ethos is we've always resonated with story, but it does seem like right now it seems to resonate with culture maybe more than it has even in the past couple of decades. And I was thinking about this as you were speaking. I mean, everything from country to rap feeds off story, you know, narrative. Mm-hmm. And it really is intriguing to me how people respond to that, how that seems to resonate just with who they are. And one of the things that I think you said that I appreciate is that you really can kind of lose yourself in the music as you sort of imagine yourself in the story.
Yeah.
So one thing that sets you apart is that you're not just a singer, you're not just a musician, you are a songwriter. I mean, you're writing, you know, this rich music that you're then singing and sort of welcoming us into your world. What is it about Nashville? Because you are unique. I mean, you're Nashvillian. I mean, this is home for you, born and raised here. Mm-hmm. I was telling someone the other day, I mean, I've lived here for 3 years, and I know like two people who are born and raised in Nashville. Yeah. Everybody's a transplant in Nashville.
Now you know three.
Yeah, now I know three, exactly. So, but there's a great songwriting culture. What is it about Nashville that seems so conducive to this great songwriting culture?
Well, it's a culture, and I think that's what's important to understand about this town is that it's an artistic culture, but it's also we're very supportive of each other.
Yeah,
we're competitive. Don't mistake that. but we are competitive in a way that is supportive of each other. And there's also something about the South, the trees, the branches that kind of hang down low.
Yeah,
and the way that the light, you know, cast through the shade of a tree, and it's kind of swampy, so the light's kind of diffused. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something magic and mystical about the South, I think, and there's a lot of history here,
right?
And I love history, so it really does kind of set the stage. But then you've also got Southern charm, that can kind of just put you in a better mood.
And I've noticed that I wish I was musical. Someday in heaven I'm going to be able to sing, but until then I can't. And so, but I, you know, just watching musicians and songwriters, it's interesting to me how in the Nashville, you know, culture, you've got all these different genres like Christian music and country music and all that, but they seem to bleed over in a lot of relationships with songwriters and musicians and, you know, people feeding off one another. And it's just an encouragement to me, just kind of watching people relate and resonate well. So talking about you, you've grown up in Nashville. You've got this songwriting culture. Who are your heroes, your songwriting heroes?
Mm. First person that comes to mind is a guy named David Wilcox. Okay. And he is out of Asheville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But never really had a hit on the radio. But the way that he puts a song together is so brilliant.
Yeah.
I really love a guy named Tom Douglas,
okay.
who is a country songwriter. Mm-hmm. But he also talks about faith a lot. Usually my favorite songs on country radio are Tom Douglas songs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He wrote a song called I don't Know Why They Say Grown Men Don't Cry.
It's a great song.
You know that song?
I do know that song.
The House That Built Me.
It's another great
Miranda
song.
Miranda Lambert.
Yeah, it's another great song.
And one that he recently wrote with a few other guys that Tim McGraw released called Meanwhile Back at Mama's.
I haven't heard that one yet.
You need to check it
out. I'll have to find that one, yeah.
I'm a big country fan.
I am
so
too.
that's what I listen
I
to.
Too.
Like if I'm in a car, I listen to country, or if I'm really having a bad day or if I need to recalibrate my focus, I'll listen to Christian music.
Sure.
But I think that there's a lot of great music out there that can actually point us to God.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think those great songs and those three songs that I told you about are all really good at painting a picture.
Right.
And just you can insert yourself into them.
Yeah, like, you know, in theological terms, we call it God's common grace. And I think a lot of the songs that aren't necessarily explicitly Christian or in the Christian music genre really kind of help point us to God's common grace. I think just even beyond that, groups like U2 and Mumford & Sons and a lot of these groups that have rich, you know, biblical sort of backgrounds mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. help serve point us in that direction. So we know who your influences are, who your heroes are. What's a song out there that you wish you would have written?
Well, it was another song that was written by a Nashville guy, recorded by Bonnie Raitt. I Can't okay. Make You Love Me If You Don't.
That's a more of a classic song, too.
It is a classic song.
Yeah.
That one, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
That's a great
Aretha
song.
Aretha Franklin.
That is a great song.
That is such a clever song.
Yeah, it really is. It's just fun to live. One of the things I really enjoy about Nashville is living here in the middle of what I think is maybe behind Chicago, New York and L.A. only as just this rich hub of arts and entertainment and media.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tim Keller, when he went to pastor Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Manhattan, said, I want to go to the most influential city in the world, see that city changed, and it'll influence the rest of the globe, you know, because people go from there. And I feel like that about Nashville. When guys like you are here helping create rich, you know, God-honoring music, when we begin to see those sorts of things change lives here, it begins to be pervasive and it goes all the way around the world and transforms the world. We're going to come back in just a minute and continue talking a little bit more about your specific songwriting, your music, and so we're excited about coming back.
Thank you.
I've been in my church for years. At the beginning, I had a great experience.
Every week I felt challenged by my pastor. I felt encouraged by small group.
I felt motivated by the message. No complaints. But after a while, things changed.
I felt like I was coasting. Church felt just so routine. I wasn't getting much out of church anymore.
Was it someone else's fault? My pastor? My small group?
Was it me? I was stuck in a rut. God showed me my attitude was all wrong.
And slowly started to change me. I had quit serving. Church had become all about me and my needs, rather than God and His glory.
I began to sit back and let everyone else serve.
But by His grace.
By His grace.
By His grace, the Lord changed my attitude from
I want to I will.
I will.
I will.
I will. 9 Traits of the Outwardly Focused Christian. Book by Tom Rainer from BH Publishing. Learn more at tomrainer.com/I will.
Welcome back to The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. Our featured guest today is Dove Award-winning singer-songwriter Brandon Heath. We'll have more of their discussion in just a minute after we hear from Dr. Ann Bradley, the Vice President of Economic Initiatives at the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics.
Each day, we wake up with the knowledge that we have a job to do. And every minute counts. Time is a limited resource for everyone, rich or poor, male or female, young or old. The reality of limited time drives the choices we make. And it drives us to trade with one another. Is it more convenient to make something, buy something, or skip it altogether? Time, ability, and our resources are major factors in that decision. But so is personal preference. We trade with one another based on what we prefer to do. Do we value a homegrown garden over the convenience of purchasing the fruit of someone else's labor? These are the decisions that drive the trades we make. The reason this works so well is because it's God's design. He created us to apply our gifts and skills and talents to His creation. And when we do this well, we glorify Him and serve each other. Trade helps us come together to do this better than we ever could on our own. But when people do not have the freedom to live out these principles, there is more poverty. When all your energy goes into the basic tasks of surviving each day, then you have no time to do what you prefer. You can't fully thrive. In many nations of Africa, for example, the women and girls there spend all day getting water and preparing food. These women don't have a choice about how to spend their time. But if they lived in a more flourishing society, they would be able to make more fulfilling choices. The freer the society is, the more new ideas can be developed and new products and services are brought into the market. Not only does that stimulate human flourishing, it also saves lives. I know this from personal experience. My daughter and I survived a very traumatic pregnancy. When I went into early labor and was rushed to the hospital, we didn't know what was going to happen. There was nothing I could do. I had to rely on countless people that I did not know and trust them to care for me. What kind of society makes this even possible? A free society where people are able to use their gifts to serve others. In another place and another time, we may have been dead, but that's not our story because free markets save lives. That option should be available to all mothers, but it's not. The old motto, be all you can be, is the essence of human flourishing. If we want our fellow humans to flourish, we need to ensure their freedom so that they can live into exactly who God has created them to be and live more fulfilled lives within the limited context of time. We all have work to do, and every minute counts. That's why economics matters.
So we've talked a lot about your influences and just the culture here in Nashville writing songs. Talk to us a little bit about your own music. As you write music, first of all, maybe what's one of your favorite songs you've written, one or two of your favorite songs that you've written?
Well, for several reasons, I'm Not Who I Was is one of my, if not the favorite song I've ever written. And part of it is because of why it was written.
Okay.
It was just an act of forgiveness. And I didn't have a record deal or a publishing deal at the time.
Sure.
So there really was no motivation.
Right.
Other than I need to forgive somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And ask for forgiveness myself. And so that song ended up becoming my first big hit, my first number one, and it paved the way for everything else for me.
So let me ask you just about that. I was thinking about this as you answered that. You're a fairly introverted sort of guy, right?
I mean, yeah.
That's who you are. That's a pretty vulnerable place to be for you to kind of tell your story, and a story of you grappling with issues in your own heart and sin, and then for you to sort of put that on stage for the whole world. How does that affect you as you're sort of vulnerable on a massive stage for all these people to sort of walk through your experience with you?
I'll be honest, I did not want that song to go on the first record.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was just a song that I wrote for myself. So I wrote it out of therapy.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my producer put this pop beat to it, you know, and I thought, man, that's kind of cool.
You know? I like that.
So I thought, you know, maybe people do need to hear this song, but I also was really protective of the person that the song is written about.
Sure.
Because they didn't know that there was a song about them on the radio.
Yeah.
I have since reconnected with that person. And I'll tell you, it was my stepmom, mm-hmm. my first stepmom. My dad's been remarried several times. Sure. So my stepmom and he divorced after about 6 or 7 years of marriage. Mm-hmm. And then 15 years went by and I didn't see her again. Mm-hmm. And there was just something in my heart that I needed to get off my chest. So I, sure. you know, I wrote that song and it reached her.
Yeah.
She's now a believer and
that's awesome.
Loves Christian music. Did not know that was me and definitely didn't know that song was written about her.
That's an interesting
moment. So, yeah. I don't mind as much now being vulnerable, but at first it was horrifying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Naked on stage, so to, you know, I mean, it's got to be difficult. But here's what I love about that. So, you know, I've been a pastor for a lot of years. I call it the plastic pastor syndrome, right? We comb our hair the right way. We behave a certain way. And I feel like a lot of people who are on a platform, on a stage, feel like they have to behave a certain way, perform a certain way. But I found that God uses vulnerability in powerful ways to draw people into relationship with Him. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful that you're kind of willing to allow yourself to be on display in that way. How have you seen, beyond just the personal story with your stepmom now in your own life, how have you seen your music intersect with people's lives and help transform their lives, you know, point them to the gospel, point them to Christ?
Well, I get to meet a lot of people after shows.
Yeah.
And I hear lots of stories that way. And it's always hard because you've got a line of people and you're trying to get through the line.
Right.
And it's hard to just pause in some of those stories. So what I have found is that, and honestly, my wife has helped a lot with this, mm-hmm. is that people love to go on Facebook and tell you what your song has done for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that has been a great motivation for me.
Sure.
It can't be your only motivation, or
sure.
then you're in trouble, but it is a big motivation for me these days to hear stories about what songs are doing in people's lives. And I remember one time meeting a gentleman at a show who he said, I was in rehab for an addiction that I could not kick, and I was in rehab for a while. It was in the middle of nowhere in the mountains in either New York or New Jersey, and he said there were no real radio stations in range except for a Christian music station. And he said, I didn't listen to Christian music, but I needed to hear music. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing that really came in was Christian music. And he said, I heard your song, I'm Not Who I Was. And that song became a breakthrough moment for me. And honestly, 10 minutes before I came up here to mm-hmm. do this interview, there was a woman that I met in the lobby. Her husband had a breakthrough moment with
that
song. And I got chills. Like, talking to her, I was like, wow, look at my arm. I got chills.
Yeah.
So to know that, you know, I wrote that song sitting at my dining room table, just needing to get something off my chest. There are other songs. Give Me Your Eyes has really become a part of people's sermons.
Yeah, right.
It's often on when somebody gets back from a missions trip, mm-hmm. they'll need some background
recap
music.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah, it makes good recap
music.
So I've heard that a lot. That song has completely blown me away. But then sometimes it'll be like a B-side song.
Sure.
Like I have a song called London mm-hmm. about missing the one that you're supposed to be with. Like, you know, I wrote that with a guy that was missing his wife and he was in London. And so that's what we wrote about. And, you know, people just gather stuff like that from songs, and I think that's so cool.
I think it's amazing. I'm curious, you know, you've been doing this for a lot of years now. You've had a lot of success, you know, by standard of selling albums, concerts, all of those things. How do you protect your heart and your walk with Jesus? You know, you've got success. People look to you. They want to know you, or they want to get to hang out with you, that sort of thing. You sell a lot of albums. How do you protect your heart and faithfully walk with Jesus in the midst of what can be a cutthroat sort of vocation, right?
Mm-hmm. You know what I've found is that most people don't know what I look like.
Interesting.
Which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Because I can lead a pretty normal life.
Sure.
You know, when you're a household name and everybody knows what you look like, that would be a nightmare to me. And I think God knows that about me.
Sure.
That I would end up not intentionally being rude to people, but I don't know that I would enjoy that kind of life.
Sure.
And there's some people that, like, famous people who really don't like being famous.
Yeah, right.
For me, it's always fun to be recognized, but for me, I enjoy flying under the radar.
Yeah.
One thing that I would struggle with is entitlement.
Yeah.
If I can be honest.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten to work with really great sound engineers.
Yeah.
Really great lighting people. I've been around great people, and sometimes if I get to a certain show and it's not set up very well,
right,
or it wasn't promoted very well,
sure,
it can really hurt my pride
a
little bit.
Yeah.
So more than needing the fame or the recognition, which can be a little bit of a struggle, I would say, but for me, it's more like, I've worked hard, I deserve this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And man, God will just strike that down.
He's good that way, right?
Yeah, he's like, oh, you deserve that, huh? So, that's one thing that I struggle with. And what helps is that every once in a while, I will find myself in a situation where it's not the most ideal setup or maybe there's not a lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to remember when I was starting out, I played a show in a little cafe in Houston, and there were three people there.
Yeah.
Two people were there to study, and one person was my aunt.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So there was nobody there to see me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I played that show like I was playing it for 1,000 people.
Right.
And after it was done, I had a girl approach me and say, hey, you played a song that has really given me courage to forgive someone in my past.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember that.
That's
doesn't
awesome.
Matter how many people are in the audience.
Right.
You can do something big.
That's really encouraging. And I really appreciate you hanging out with us today. Thanks for taking some time. And looking forward to being able to see how this helps serve the church.
Me too. Amen. Thank you for having me.
Yep. So for resources, books, and Bible studies mentioned in the show, visit edstetzer.com. While there, check out past episodes of The Exchange, a latest study analysis from Lifeway Research, and more. Thanks for joining us. We hope you'll be back with us next week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange. Read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange is presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. Thanks for listening to the Exchange Radio Podcast. Programming like this is made available through your support. Find out more at myfaithradio.com.